Hey everybody, it's Connor. Thank you so much for joining us for this brand new episode of Drama. Y'all have asked, and we're finally delivering. We've got a guest from Broadway's literal cultural sensation, Oh Mary, on the pod today. That's right, we've got James Scully. You're gonna absolutely love him. Before we get into the episode, I want to tell you about our Patreon. Patreon.com/thedramapodcast, where for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive bonus episodes between your favorite twins, Connor and Dylan, where we chit chat about all things theater, pop culture, love, and life. And you also get added to our Instagram close friends. It's so juicy, it's so dramatic, and you're gonna love it. $5, patreon.com/thedramapodcast to support your favorite twins, your favorite podcast, and you get even more of it. All right. It's the show you've been waiting for. Let's get to it.
Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet.
Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, 24 hours from now, you'll be in New York here.
I know, so this is a true time capsule of an episode. I cannot contain my excitement. And I mentioned in an episode that's coming out this week. So if you're everyone's doing their mental gymnastics, they'll know that I'm excited about two shows mostly. One of them, Sunset Boulevard, and the other, Oh Mary, and we're seeing them in the same night.
A 5 o'clock Oh Mary, followed by an 8 o'clock Sunset Boulevard. I mean, this is lives will be changed. And by lives, I mean
Yes.
ours.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so ready. Now, you have seen Oh Mary with our friend Isaiah.
I have, and I'm obsessed with it. And what I say to people is this: the hype is real. You know, oftentimes things are hyped up in this way where by the time you finally see it, you're like, no, it was fun. It was good. Not with Oh Mary. Oh Mary lives up to it. It is so freaking funny. We're going to talk all about it with our guest who is from the show itself. But I know, Don, I can't wait for you to see it. And of course, we won't spoil bits of it because you haven't taken it in yet. But
I'm feeling parallels real quick because the last time we had a gay man who was in Fire Island, the movie, was Zane Phillips a couple weeks ago. And we hit it off like gangbusters before the chat. And in the lead up to the recording, I binged his Netflix show. And I did the same with this guest because for some reason, you was never on my radar, but it was you obviously
I still can't believe
ate it up.
I watched season one when it was airing on Lifetime.
I remember that.
Well, because I worship at the church of Shay Mitchell.
Right.
She is like the hottest woman alive. And so she was iconically playing a character named Peach in
Right.
season one. And so I followed it to Netflix and it led me to James. It led me to today's guest. So let's bring him in. Y'all, our guest today is currently making his Broadway debut in the smash comedy of the century, Oh Mary, as Mary's teacher, a role he originated off-Broadway at the Lucille Lortel Theater. On screen, you'll surely recognize him from the Heathers television series as JD from season two of the aforementioned You on Netflix as 40 Quinn, and from Hulu's Fire Island film as the Dreamboat Charlie opposite Bone Yang. Additional on-screen appearances include Titans, Modern Love, Problemista, and Phantasmus. He has slayed the cycle scene as a fitness instructor, wrangled wild children as a nanny, co-starred with a Bloomin' Onion in Outback Steakhouse commercials, and is now right where he belongs, literally right now at the Lyceum Theater. You will carry regret with you for the rest of your life if you don't see our guests shine in Oh Mary on Broadway through January 19th only, and hopefully they extend. Please welcome to Drama, James
James
Scully.
Scully! That introduction made me emotional. Oh my God, you guys really did your research. I don't even remember that I did half of those jobs. Wow. Oh, thank you for saying all of those lovely
Of
things.
course, James, of course.
James, we love you in every single thing we've seen you in. The only thing I think I've missed is the Outback commercials.
Oh, right.
They're on YouTube. I'll see what I can do and I'll follow up with some links, some pertinent links.
Were you paid in Bloomin' Onions?
No, but when I got back from the second commercial shooting, my friends were like, we should go to Outback Steakhouse. And we did the one on 23rd. And even though I begged her not to. My friend told the wait staff that I had just been in two commercials. The manager came out, shook my hand, thanked me, and gave our table a comped Bloomin' Onion. So that happened. Yeah. Thank you, Lizzie Wilde. Good looking out.
She's a good friend. She's fun. I would have done the same thing if I went to Outback with you.
I was like, please, no, but it's okay.
They now have a plaque of you like in the back, you know.
I imagine. Honestly, that I would take first dates there and be like, I don't know if you noticed that. Oh, is this a plaque? Well, who's on here? Oh, it's me.
Right.
Hi.
James, listen, welcome to Drama. We're stoked to have you here. Before we dive into the chat, you're in your dressing room at the Lyceum, which is so, I love the lighting. Mm. I feel like I saw on Instagram, they did a little tour with you, of your dressing room on some platform. Was it the O Mary Socials or what?
It was Theater Mania. It was supposed to be Tony, who plays Simon's dressing room tour, but then they were like, while we're here, I'm having fun with it, you know.
It's cute. Is the green light your choice?
Yes, I have a bunch of colored. I don't know if like picking my iPad up and turning around would be too disorienting, but I have a bunch of colored lights in here just trying to like set, you know, dare I say, a vibe. But yes, that.
I know. Well, it is giving bisexual lighting, I have to say.
It's not giving bisexual in the chat, but I honor that community and I love them and I'm happy to represent them with my aesthetic choice.
Representation matters. Listen,
it sure as hell does. James, we like to check in with all of our guests. Are you well?
I am well. I'm so flattered to be here. I'm so happy to be at work today. It's the end of our work week, which it feels like, you know, the last show of the week, everybody is like, okay, everything that I have left in the tank and then a little bit more because I know I have tomorrow off. And those make for really exciting and interesting shows sometimes. So I'm excited about that. I am and have been all day thinking a lot about the very unexpected to, I think, the grand public who adored him, passing of Gavin Creel. I want to acknowledge that the two of you reached out and were like, if you don't feel like doing this today, we don't have to. And I think I had that thought before I heard from you. It was like, he's been a guest of theirs. It's entirely possible they don't want to do this today. And I think just the fact that we were all thinking that says so much about him and who he was and how much he meant immediately. That said, in my two relatively brief but very lovely interactions with him, I picked up that he is not the kind, that's not how he would want us to honor the day, I don't think. I think the idea of people getting together and talking about theater and how much it means to them is exactly what he would want all of us to do. I don't want to like bogart the mic, but I guess I just want to say that he, you know, all when I was in high school and college studying musical theater, he was the blueprint to so many of us. In the grand tradition of Sasha Colby, he was your favorite musical theater performer's favorite musical theater performer.
Especially a tenor.
Yeah, I was going to say tenor specifically. I've definitely lowered some of his oeuvre like two full steps so I could try and sing it like he did. I just, a divinely given talent, a really, really kind person. And I don't know. I just didn't want to go without acknowledging that.
Thank you for doing that.
I know.
That.
Thank you so much. It's been a shocking day. To your point, James, like I've loved Gavin forever. And when he did our show a couple years ago, it started a beautiful friendship between the three of us. And he was the most generous, kind, talented person. Oh my God, I feel like I'm gonna start crying, but they don't make them like that anymore.
Yeah.
Like they really don't. I remember he intentionally turned off his self view on the Zoom because he just wanted to look at us during the chat. Like he was just like not into, meanwhile, I'm staring at myself the whole call. Well, when it was Gavin, I'm staring at Gavin.
No, of course, right.
But... or James, of course. But no, he was the best. And it's very shocking and very sad. And yeah, his legend will live on forever in like the lives he impacted in truly every single way. Like I love him so much. Everyone did. Everyone still does.
Yeah.
James, I love that you acknowledged all this too, because you said it in such a sweet and sincere way. And what you mentioned about how he would have wanted us to keep going, like I'm seeing a lot of things about how he just wanted everyone to live life. And like, that's what we're doing.
Yes.
We're keeping going.
Oh.
The fact that like we're able to talk and honor not only him, but what he loved, I think is really special. And so I feel like he'll be threaded throughout this conversation as well.
Yes, he certainly will.
When did you meet him?
Most recently, not this past year, but the Halloween before, I did Jay Armstrong Johnson's I Put a Spell on You. Yeah. And he was the lead man of like a skeleton bone band that sort of did the pre-show for that performance. It was the first time we were doing it at Sony Hall. So Jay really upped the ante in a beautiful way. And he was there. And I remember I was sitting with Robin Herder, one of the many icons that happily called him a friend. And she could tell, obviously, that I was like, oh my God, it's Gavin Creel. Just breathless, like trying to be like, yeah, we're all here together doing this show together. Not how I felt, obviously. Right? I was like, I'm at the Gavin Creel meet and greet, even though he does not know that we're in the same room right now. And she saw that and then just sort of like called him over to say hello to her and then just sort of effortlessly turned to do something else. So it was Gavin and I sitting there alone together. And he, you know, look, I think we're, thanks to one Miss Chapel Roan, having a really interesting dialogue and discourse about the way that famous artists should be accessible to the people who love and support them. And I have very low expectations in that department when I meet the people in that position. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's a grace to people who understand live and in real time what they mean to someone and how they can. I'm a gay man of a certain age who studied musical theater. He knows what I'm thinking when I'm standing next to him in the room. I mean, he was all of the things that everybody has been saying all day that he was. He was not presumptuous. He was unassuming. He was sweet. He was like, you're doing a fabulous job. I was like, I can put that on my tombstone. Just, yeah. Sorry. We said we were going to spend the whole episode talking about this, but there's so much to say.
So much.
Yeah.
It's ironic too, that it was then 2 years ago was when we recorded with him when he was promoting that event. It was 2022. Then we all had the same encounter around the same time.
And you guys get, we all get it.
Oh yeah.
It's been really, I mean, it's been beautiful to see truly everyone you can think of today speaking of what a light he was in their lives.
Yeah, it's so true. I think what's cool is that, like, as in the theater world, it is small. And so we all feel like everything belongs to us in that way. Even people who didn't know him, but were affected by him, whether it was a live performance or just a cast recording or, you know, it's really special. And also he's from Ohio and so are we. And I know you've got some Ohio roots too. So
yeah,
the threading continues.
Go Otters. Yeah.
Go Otters.
I guess that's what we can which incidentally, not the Otterbein mascot, it's the Cardinals for some reason, but we self-identified as Otters while we were there. My class did anyway.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think it's just, I guess all any of us can hope for is a body of work and like a community that we leave behind that just by existing is like threaded through so many people's lives. Like he did touch so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Gavin.
Yeah. Thank you, Gavin. We miss you already.
I hope he's singing open, light, effortless B flats on an E vowel in heaven right now. Just floating them up there. My first, like, at the performing arts high school that I went to, the first musical we did was Thoroughly Modern Millie. And the boy who played Jimmy would drive me home. And he was, of course, 15, 16 at the time, trying to sing that vocal line, which is crazy. And we would just listen to Gavin sing over and over and over again. And it was like, I just remember, it was just so, that's such a formative memory for me. And me at the time, I'm being like, yeah, if you're going to sing, this is how you should sing.
So you were already bitten by the theater bug in high school?
Yes, I was bitten by the theater bug. I would say pretty early in my life. Mm-hmm.
We'd love to hear all about it. We call it the Ring of Keys moment on the show. You know, that moment where you realized a life in the arts was for you. Some people have one, some people have many. I have a feeling you've had a few connecting the dots moments.
Yeah, I have a list, if it's not rude to look at my phone.
This is very Angie K on Real Housewives of Salt Lake pulling out her scroll.
Hopefully more that than Monica pulling out the burn book. Bless her heart. As Heather said, she wants to be iconic. She's just not. Hard to argue with the science, ladies and gentlemen. So in kindergarten, I was cast in a Christmas pageant as a hedgehog at a school for like baby animals that was putting on the Christmas pageant. And the other animals were like, you can't be any of the roles because you're a hedgehog and you're going to poke all of us. But then there was something, I believe that there was like garbage left behind before the night of their performance. And they were like, what are we going to do? We have to do the pageant. And I used my spines to pick up the garbage. Very like Rudolph coded, you know what I mean? And then everyone was so thankful that I got to be the star at the end of the pageant. So then at the end of the pageant, I crawl up behind the Christmas tree and I stick my face to the star and I smile really big. And I would say maybe that was the earliest moment that I was like, this is for me.
That's adorable.
I love it.
Do you ever seen Love Actually?
Very that. No lobsters, unfortunately.
Okay, yes. Okay. Yeah, okay, that's what I'm picturing.
No lobsters or octopi.
Well, because I know you had some years in England, right? So I was thinking, is this like a British pageant?
I'm wondering if, I mean, the thing back then was my parents would just put on the Phantom of the Opera, like OG cast recording, and I would just like dance around the living room to it. So that for sure. The 10th anniversary recording of Les Mis with Cole Mulkinson as Jean Valjean.
Oh, it's beyond. I loved that
recording. Yeah, we would watch that all the time. What I had written down on my list was Emma Thompson and Kenneth Branagh's Much Ado About Nothing. Have you ever seen it?
No, but I love her.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
She's magnificent.
Emma Thompson, Kenneth Branagh as Beatrice and Benedict. Denzel Washington, Keanu Reeves. So many, like, really, the cast is kind of nuts in how many people they packed in. Michael Keaton, it's tremendous. But Emma Thompson's performance specifically is delicious. Oh, my God. She's so good. She's so beautiful. She's so funny. I don't know if you know the plot of this show, of that show, but there's...
Oh, yeah.
So when Claudio, really unchilly, by the way, like almost beats Hero up at their almost wedding because he thinks she cheated on him, which is like, you can't recognize the back of your own girlfriend's head. I digress. They leave. And then Benedict, Kenneth Branagh, is to Emma Thompson very beautifully and earnestly because it's their first real earnest moment as lovers since they decided, like, okay, we're going to start smooching. He's like, what can I do to make this better? And Emma Thompson turns and looks at him and she says, kill Claudio. And you're like, even as a six-year-old, my blood would run cold. I was like, that she is not fucking around. He needs to go find that man and murder him.
Oh my
so
God.
Emma Thompson and Much Ado About Nothing.
Was this like a stage production filmed or was this like a real?
No, it's a full
length feature film.
Movie. Yeah. And wow. It is, I don't know who directed it, but they did a fabulous job.
So good. And the way that she is lit in that movie, she just looks like an angel.
She's glowing. Everybody, because it's set in like Tuscany, I think, at like a villa. Mm-hmm. Everyone's wearing like white linen the whole film. You're just like, God, I want to be there and drink so badly.
I know. Oh,
yeah.
She was Oscar nominated for that.
Oh.
In fact, she may have, or no, did she win for?
Did she?
I'm Googling everything. I never do this, but I feel like I'm with family, James. So let's see.
I have my list up on my phone. That doesn't bother me at all. Yeah, God, she's just responded. And so is everybody else.
She was not Oscar nominated.
Which is, I don't know. I think people are nervous about Shakespeare. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Academy was like, we don't know Shakespeare, so we can't tell you if it's good acting or
that's
not.
Such a good point.
Even though she's undeniable in that film. Have you ever seen The Fifth Element?
No.
Really, really good sci-fi movie starring Bruce Willis, who is, he's in his sort of peak, like Die Hard, like, I'm kind of scary, but also I'm like, he's like one of those pit bulls, but in the videos where they're like licking babies' heads. You know what I'm saying? Where you're like, oh, so big and muscly and gentle and kind. There's a scene in that where Mia Jovovich kills a room full of aliens as Sarah Brightman is singing opera in the background. So that was definitely a moment where I was just like...
That's camp as hell. And you obviously knew Sarah B from your Phantom dancing around the living room.
I sure did. And I was like, wait, I recognize that effortless, clear, pingy soprano.
Were you like a little boy soprano singing along to like Angel of Music?
I was, and I didn't sing through the change because I was embarrassed that I had such a girly voice. And, you know, as I approached the beginnings of puberty was obviously when people started to be like, why do you talk like a girl?
Mm-hmm, the worst.
Why do you, you know, God, the insight on gender was really interesting in Southern Texas when I was a child. I stopped singing because I was like, oh, it's embarrassing that being girly is bad and I sing like a girl. And that really makes me sad because I thought my singing voice could have been, I was never going to be Gavin Creel, but my singing voice could have been T if I had like pushed through the change. Maybe I could have kept some of that upper register. I did not. She's a happy bass now.
So did you sing though? Like when you went to Otterbein, were you like BFA musical theater though? Did you still sing at least?
I was a musical theater major. Yeah, I did.
What else is on the list?
I'm obsessed with your list.
Next was, have you seen Aliens
Of course.
The sequel to Alien.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's when Sigourney Weaver walks in the Mecca and says, get away from her, you bitch, uh-huh. at the end of that movie.
Legendary.
Robin Williams is the genie in Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was the pirate king in high school, and that was just kind of like another moment. That was a moment where I more seriously, as I was beginning to apply for colleges, was like, could I actually do this for like meaningful employment? So being the pirate king, Stanley Tucci, I just wrote Stanley Tucci.
Uh-huh.
And then I had more, but I feel like I've given you, I feel like we have a lot to work with. So I'll stop it.
You've given us so much. I'm obsessed with all of this. Stanley Tucci is so sexy.
He's, and look, sometimes I get my little tail feathers in a kerfuffle about straight actors playing gay roles because I have trauma. As Jamie Lee Curtis would say, I have trauma.
Trauma, yeah.
Intergenerational trauma, women's trauma. Stanley Tucci is the one person who I'm like, please play more gay men. Oh my God, 50 more, please. I'll pay you personally out.
He understands.
you honor my lived experience as a gay man better than I would on camera. So please.
The essence, he captures it so perfectly.
The moment in Burlesque where he's holding the clothing rack open and looking at the chair, and you can tell in what I believe must have been an improvised moment, he says, God, you look fabulous, darling. You're just like, oh.
I love a Burlesque reference.
I actually only saw it for the first time like last year, but that I was then, you know, I was like, oh, this is why it's like a staple of every gay person I've ever met has been like, you haven't seen Burlesque? Have you guys seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, it's been a long time. I was like, this is going to land.
Yeah. It's been years, but yeah, definitely have seen it. I remember the guy who Christina Aguilera is dating. He has that like nude scene where he's holding the box of, what is it, like cereal or cookies or something? I don't know.
Sorry, not to be gross. He gets smaller and smaller and smaller. He's fully clothed, and then he comes back out and he's shirtless, and then he comes back out in a towel, and then he comes back out naked actually, but they shoot it so that it's like a box of tissues or something. It's covering his, yeah. And as me, young closeted me, I didn't even see the movie, but I saw
the clip.
I think in the trailer they played that clip, and I was like, I'm gonna die. Yeah.
He was so hot. Wait, so
we can throw that on the ring of keys too.
I know, right?
How old were you when you came out?
16.
Young.
I think it was my junior year of high school. So I guess at the time I felt like I was a couple of years behind. And in retrospect, you know, obviously I was making a live on the ground calculation of what I was comfortable with and what felt safe and good for me. In retrospect, I of course wish that I had come out in like fifth grade, and anybody who had given me shit about it, I'd just been like, and what exactly the fuck are you going to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't do that because I was a fifth grader. Also, sorry if cursing is...
No.
What does iHeartRadio feel about cursing? Do they mind? Okay.
They love us for who we are.
They said don't change a thing.
They were like, curse more. It's really good for engagement.
Yeah. You know, I often think about that. I think sometimes about what my life would have been like had I come out sooner.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Dylan and I, as gay twins, he and I even didn't really talk about it much. It's funny. I remember talking about coming out with Gavin on that episode, by the way.
You know, we gotta.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
We gotta. But Dylan and I didn't really talk about it with each other that much because we come from like this Irish Catholic background in Cleveland, Ohio. And...
Same, actually.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, Scully. Yeah.
You get
Scully.
It.
My dad has 8 brothers and sisters, and some of them are super Catholic. We weren't really growing up, but when my grandparents visited, we would go to mass. And yeah, the vibe was definitely like... You can be a lot of things. You shouldn't be gay. One time I accidentally did communion when we were visiting family in Maine. And my cousin was like, bro, you were not supposed to do that. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, it's a Catholic mass. We've been here for 2 hours. I was hungry and thirsty.
It looks so good at that point.
To any Catholics listening, sorry. I think Catholicism specifically is... There's a pageantry and kind of a spooky quality to it that is beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean to be glib about confirmation or communion. Yeah.
I totally agree. My favorite thing about being Catholic growing up was like, we would go to mass at midnight, and I loved that it was like candle lit on like Christmas Eve. Sorry.
Oh,
yeah. Like I have been to some Christmas Eve midnight masses, and there is something about,
That to me was like you said, there was a pageantry to it.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. So being in Texas, were there other gay kids at your school though? Like, or
there were, and some of them had come out, especially when I got to high school, because we had both like a kind of like hippy dippy international studies magnet program on campus that I was a part of, and the arts high school which had 7 different majors, I think. There was musical theater, technical theater, instrumental music, creative writing, cinematography, visual art, and dance were all. But so there was definitely, just like everybody in all of those disciplines, there was a higher incidence of queerness. It's been really cool. My friend Andy, who I went to high school with, just came and is now like a queer drag performance artist. And so there's been a lot of that. A lot of people that I went to high school with, now in retrospect, it's like, oh, of course you were. But at the time, none of us had the vocabulary to discuss it. And we were all kind of scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going from performing arts high school, you're now on Broadway. Was it a dream to get to Broadway?
Yeah, for sure. Really, again, since even, it was like a vague dream when I was a child, because my family really did love show tunes. And I was around that a lot as a kid. And then in high school, for sure. I don't know. It's funny because for me, it felt sort of like audacious to hope for that when you're a kid. I think on some level, I was like, yeah, maybe, but I don't know that I was. And then post high school, in college, definitely. That was, you know, BFA programs. That's when it was like, this is what must happen. And then out of college, obviously, my career and life took sort of an unexpected detour into an entirely different branch of entertainment. And I do think in all of that, it's not that I ever stopped loving it or hoping for it. I just was like, how and when and for who would that happen? And I almost also felt like, you know, I had like left, I had stopped doing it and spent a whole decade of my life dedicated to film and television. I think I had a lot of imposter syndrome around the idea of coming back into New York, and especially doing Broadway, because as you said, it's a community of people who have been like on that, grinding their nose to that grindstone for so long. And I was like, what kind of space can I rightfully take up there? But so it kind of, it came out of left field for me. I was not thinking a year ago, like, oh yes, I'm imminently about to be on Broadway. And that's something I'm thinking about and hoping for. It just kind of happened.
How did it happen? Did you audition for Oh Mary?
I...
She's offer only.
I didn't. I did a reading, which I was at the time not thinking of as an audition. I just went in and was like, I can't believe Cola Escola like knows who I am, and I can't believe that they want me to be any part of this. And we did the reading, and then many months later my managers were like, hey, so actually they're doing that and they want you to do it. And I was like, wow, okay, thank goodness. I'm glad. And then one day in the theater, we got an email like at 7 as we were about to start the show from production being like, hey, come to the production offices tomorrow. It's not a big deal. Don't mention it to anyone. Not a big deal. Nobody's in trouble. Just come. Don't ask any questions. We'll talk about it tomorrow. And so, of course, I immediately went to Cole and was like, who are they publicly beheading in the cast? Like, what does this email mean? And Cole was like, had fluoride in. So it was like, type, 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 type. And held up their phone and it just said Broadway in a text bubble to me. And I was like, and then that's what happened.
That is so iconic.
So cool to be like, yeah.
They're an absolute genius. Oh my God.
They're, again, making a through line in the spirit of Gavin Creel. They are the like least arrogant, the most humble, sensitive, thoughtful. And, you know, their oeuvre is, the way that they do comedy can be very confrontational. They're definitely challenging their audience. But then you meet them and it's like, oh, you're just this like soft, warm ray of light of a person.
That's so cool. Yeah. I love to hear that. I mean, because I could see them coming across as maybe intimidating, especially, I mean, for those of us who watched Search Party.
That was a masterful performance.
Yes.
Like, ooh.
I mean, it was, people don't talk about that enough.
No, they don't.
People are like introducing Cola Scola, talking about how this is introducing Cola Scola to a larger, certainly like, American audience, definitely the theater industry, but I'm like, how do you all not already know about them from that? Just, yeah, it's like delicious. They're so good at that.
Oh my God, chilling. Yeah.
And obviously incredible as Mary. And I mean, for the listeners, we're coming to see Oh Mary this week and Dylan hasn't seen it yet. So Dylan, I can't wait for you to dive in. I mean, James plays Mary's teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary is Mary Todd Lincoln.
Allegedly.
Okay.
I don't see how that's any of your business until you sit down in that seat. And I'm just kidding. Yes, that's enough. You're allowed to know that she's
okay. To me, there is mystery that surrounds the show, yet it's been this hit that it's almost impossible to get a ticket to, you know?
People have been really, the reviewers and our audience members have been really kind about like not spilling the goods. I think because they recognize that that's, I think, not to toot Cole's horn, I'll say, one of the more ingenious pieces of the thing is all of the twists that they managed to fit into, especially the last 25 minutes of 85 minutes. And I just think it's nice that people are like, yeah, we want wider audiences to get to experience this. Like even the people on ShowScore giving us nasty reviews are still not spoiling any of the surprises, which I'm like, thank you for that.
You read the reviews.
That's the first I've heard of anybody not liking it. So
look, it's not for everybody. Nothing should be. If something's for everyone, it's like probably not very interesting.
That's a good point.
It's like water or bread. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Good to have around. Shouldn't get rid of water and bread, but you know.
Do you read what people write about the show online then?
ShowScore followed me today and I followed them back because I was like, I don't want to alienate ShowScore. I don't know. And so then I was like, huh, I wonder. Heather's and specifically me in it, horribly, viciously reviewed, eviscerated. I cried in bed for 3 days. I was like, I can't act anymore. No one's ever going to hire me again. You know, as Rihanna said, people are going to talk whether you do bad or good. I don't know. It just doesn't affect me anymore, which is really nice. And I'm like, the contract is we give you art and you have a response to it. What am I going to tell someone? Like, you didn't get it. You need to go see, you need to pay another $250 and see it again. No, they thought what they thought. You know,
that's a good point. That's a really good point. And I can only imagine the thick skin that, you know, going through something difficult like that would have helped you build.
Well, I'm so thankful for it because you meet people who have never had to face that kind of rejection until well into their career. And it's so much more confusing and devastating then. I'm glad that right out the gate, I had a healthy, not a fear of God, but I had a healthy fear in general instilled into me.
What motivated you to keep pushing on through that heartbreak then, post-Heathers?
Supporting myself financially. and some of the people I'm most thankful for in the whole entire world are my representatives, my agents, and my managers. I think about them constantly. My parents were not stage parents. I could have been, you know, like a park ranger or something. And as long as I was happy, they would have come and visit me and been stoked for me. And something I sort of like about my relationship with my representatives is that they are innately invested in the success of my career as an actor. And so a lot of these wins mean sometimes like me trying to explain to my mom and give her the context of like booking something like you. She's just like, yeah, that's nice. That's really, you seem excited. I'm excited for you. But my agents and managers are like, get it and are there with me. They, at the time, were like, no, you're not going to give up and stop acting, you stupid, dumb, stupid little idiot. Anyway, here's some self-tapes for next week. Get them done on time.
Wow.
So I just kept doing it because they were like, you need to keep doing it. And so I kept doing it. I would not, though, probably have survived that period of my life or going further as an actor without them. So Charles Mastro, Pietro, if you hear this podcast episode, I love you.
Shout out. You got a really good team.
Shout out.
Yeah.
An unsung hero. I feel like they normally don't get, you know, the attention they deserve. And
the way they're going to be, should I ever be lucky enough to win any award for anything, the way my last, but certainly not least will be, is my team is, I cry when I think about it. I love them all so much. They really are. And look, not everybody has this kind of relationship, but mine, I don't know. They're like good people and they care. And it's like you're spending, like one of them came to see this show recently, Glenn Solners, who's a partner at my agency. And he was so like, he's in a beautiful way, very agent coded. When he saw me in the hallway afterwards, he was like, and what's next? I can't wait to see. It's always about what's next. And I was like, yes, love that you have that attitude. Would love to, you know, continue to be employed when I'm no longer cute enough to be Mary's teacher. But right now, though, I just want you to know that, like, I am living my dream. I'm here in the Broadway theater still talking to you, living my dream. And that's because of you. That's because of the work that they do. They spend all day having these conversations that basically we are too delicate to have in the hopes that, or not too delicate, but that it would just be too complicated for us to advocate for ourselves in that way. So that I can, you know what I mean? So much of my life has been better and defined by their investment of time and energy. And I just like, yeah, I'm so thankful for that. Sorry about these. It's long tangents with me, boys. I'm sorry you have to sit.
No, I love it. We're eating up every word, I just got to say. Okay, so the show is through January. There's been extensions, you know, here and there over the last couple of months. What have been some highlights for you of the O'Mary journey this past year?
There's a moment on stage every night that I will try to vaguely describe. Connor will know what I'm talking about. That is actually also a Ring of Keys moment. It's probably my most recent Ring of Keys moment, where Cole has a speech that they give about a lot of things, about life and expectations and being a person in the world. And it's so, I mean, it's one thing for the audience. I'm kneeling inches from them when they're giving this speech. Every night watching them do that, watching them talk about like grief and joy, and as they themselves are in a moment of immense, like they're doing this to an audience of like 900 people who are sitting silent, leaning forward in their chairs to hear every word, is so powerful and really did remind me like why I like doing this, the realness of that moment for them. So that's been a high, getting to do that. Like, I'm going to get to do that in a couple of hours. And that's crazy that I just get to do that every day. I get to sit and witness this person have this immense, beautiful moment of triumph. I mean, not to be gauche, we've had a couple of really fun people come to see the show that I've got to meet that I never would have imagined I'd get to share space with. Kristen Chenoweth was here recently. Julia Murney showed up recently, and it was a complete surprise. I had no idea she was coming. I was literally shaking, not to be gross, but RuPaul's hand. And I look over RuPaul's shoulder and Julia Murney is standing right there. And I did not have time to conceal my reaction. I like gasped and my face completely fell. And I was like, and she just gets it.
Oh yeah.
She gave me the longest, warmest hug. She's a beautiful person. Rita Moreno came recently and that was obviously a bit. She shook my hand and she said, "You were delicious and you were so, so stupid." And then her daughter, who was sitting next to her, said, "And pathetic." And I was like, "Thank you both so much for those kind words." Yeah. I mean, oh, that's been a really fun part of it. Probably also, not to be too ooey and gooey, but at the end of the night, when we come out for curtain call, we bow, we bow, we bow. And then we all gesture to the part in the curtain. And Cole comes out, has yet to not get a standing ovation. And hearing the change in pitch of everyone's cheering as the curtain opens and Cole walks out. And then it's just like deafening suddenly. And watching their face is another moment. Like that's going to happen again in like 2.5 hours. Yeah.
You just gave me the chills.
James, you're very generous. It's really, really cool to see. I mean, you're having this, you're a dream come true moment here, but you're giving the flowers to Cole throughout this. It is so beautiful. Like I have warm and fuzzies inside.
The last couple, especially the last 5 years, really since I met, who should also not go unmentioned in this episode, my partner, Julio Torres.
The Julio Torres.
The Julio, yeah. Let me put some... Even though he's my cute, sweet little guy, let me put some respect on his name, the Julio Torres, multi-hyphenate, star of screen and stage, actually, as a stand-up comic.
You know, yeah, that's stage. How I was introduced
I would love to get him on Broadway somehow, but okay, thank you for being an OG.
Uh-huh.
He really switched gears, and now I almost only work in the service of weird little gay geniuses. Cole, Joelkin Booster, Julio Torres,
uh-huh.
And... I just feel so, so incredibly lucky that at one point in my life, I was like, I am going to have to figure this gay thing out because people don't seem really into it. And now that like my life and my community is so richly that. And then I'm not just like doing art. I'm doing art devised for and by and out of respect for queer people and queerness. And that's queer actors have a complicated relationship being like, am I going to be, is every character going to be gay? And I am sort of at a stage in my life where I'm like, I hope so. Like, I love straight people. My parents were straight people. I have a lot of straight friends, but I'm good. You know what I mean? I like that part of myself and that part of my life and that part of the universe. So I think that's where it's, you know, I grew up, not grew up on, but Cole definitely is somebody that before any of this happened, I had such immense respect for and just them, they say, don't meet your heroes. It's like, I don't know. I'm really lucky I met Cole, and they're just a genuine article in every way. So it's so hard nice. Not to. It's also like they devised this whole thing. Mm-hmm. This happened because of them. And I think I do a lovely, lovely job in the show. But people are showing up to see Cole every night because Cole has yet to call out of a performance, by the way. Cole gives it, and it's a tall order for them every single night. They are the reason that the show is a huge blockbuster hit, and I get to continue to perform every day. So it's, you know, you gotta be aware of, I don't know, I gotta at least mention how much I love them.
James, you are fantastic in the show. I after I saw it, I texted Dylan. I was like, James is acting down.
Big capital A.
Yeah. Okay, wait, and the pants they have you in, forget Fiero and Wicked's, you know, white pants that people have shit about.
There's room for all of us.
We're in the Mary's teacher pants era now, I think, for sure.
Fun little BTS for that. The line was, and I'm not going to give you any context for this, Dylan, the line was originally, because you have a pretty face and you look good bent over. And then the person who says that said, because you have a pretty face and a fat ass in rehearsal. And everyone, the whole room collectively was like, and Sam, our director, was like, we're keeping that. We're keeping that line at it. And so then it was a lot of sort of like working backwards from that. And Holly, our costume director, being like, another person I want to give flowers to, Holly, our costume director, love her, worked backwards from that and was like, so we're going to have pants made that really accentuate certain parts of you. And I was like, heard.
Did you change your like leg day workout for?
No, part of something I've had sort of like latently since the cycling instruction was a butt that I feel proud of. I definitely favor leg day. And then since the show started, something I've been doing, no longer officially a fitness professional, but a little tip to my friends, that was a tip delivered to me by my friend Forrest Wu, who has a really shout out to Forrest. You would think it was wild. I just name dropped him, who has a really lovely, you know, this is what's so funny about it is the line got into the show, and then it was like, how blatantly are you allowed to talk about having a big butt with your coworkers? But he has a really nice butt, and he was like, he bikes everywhere. I bike to and from the theater every day, and I think that that's been sort of my commitment to trying to continue to fill out the. But they also look those pants. She really did me right with the pants.
She did you
right. I mean, there's like a little corseting buckle on the small of my back that certainly helps. Like we're, you know.
Oh my gosh. Well, I smell a Tony nomination for the costume design.
Costume design.
Yes. Uh-huh. Somebody said that in the comments of something. They were like, whoever designed those pants for James should get a Tony Award. And I was like, stop.
Wait, James, speaking of cycling, I went to Swerve a few times in 2018. Were you teaching there then?
I might have been in LA depending on where I was, but I think at some point that's because that would have been before I booked In Between Heathers and You. I went back to teaching full time, so that would have been probably, unless I'd left to start shooting, but I don't think so. I don't know.
I would have remembered if you were my instructor, but because I worked at SoulCycle for a couple years and I still take classes there a lot, but
we know, I miss it, honestly.
God, it's so fun.
I wish I could just like teach, I guess, on Tuesdays.
You could.
Oh my god, they'd let you.
I don't know where I would do that though.
Wasn't there one right like in on like 44th Swerve, or am I thinking of a different cycling place? It was like right by, like,
no, it was, but no, Swerve doesn't really, but you know what I mean, they were doing really well, and then COVID happened, and I think they still have like a partnership with Crunch, but I don't think they have an outlet. They don't have like physical studios anymore, which is
the death of brick
kind
and
of a
mortar.
Bummer. But I know. Sorry, Peloton sorry. Said, what if?
Okay, wait, we need to talk about you really quick because Dylan just binged it.
You mentioned you play a lot of gay characters and you love to play gay characters. And I think because I had seen you in Fire Island and I know you're this out gay actor, I was pleasantly surprised that 40 was a seemingly straight role when I finally caught up on you.
He wasn't really, and that was an interesting experience because like, yes, I had a girlfriend in the show, so then people were obsessed with telling me online like, you sound gay, and we didn't believe that you were straight. To which it was like, a hobby. Like,
right.
Hug an animal. I don't know. Look into the eyes of a child. Leave me alone. I don't know you. I'm not going to be sleeping with you either way. So what does it matter?
Right.
No, actually, one of those people did turn out to be Julio. So no, I'm just kidding.
Oh, that's a nice meet.
We love like kind of a enemies to lovers arc. No, he did have a girlfriend. He also had, like, if you recall, it's like his first girlfriend he thought he had murdered because she was
right.
assaulting him. And
right.
he just like didn't, in my head, I was like, this person doesn't have like a linear relationship with sex and intimacy as much as he has like an Oedipian complex and like a mommy thing. And so he was like dating Candace, who is a mommy who treats him like a child. People watching the show weren't really coming to that conversation with that sort of nuance. They were just like, boy, girl, but boy seemed like boy, boy.
Right. And probably wanting you to be with Joe.
There was a lot of that, which I didn't mind because...
Oh, girl, I'll say
it. But see, that's part of it. And then the writers started writing towards that. They were like, we kind of like this homoerotic thing that you guys have going on. Which my greatest regret is, I bet if I had asked him, there were a couple moments where if I had been like, Penn, what if I kissed you? Just a little one. He would have been like, yeah, let's see it. Let's done, try it. Yeah. The producers might have been like, oh, just because, you know, they are doing a beautiful job of appealing to a very broad audience. But
well, then in season three, they kind of went there, though. So I don't know if you kept watching.
Is that so? Oh.
There's a swingers storyline.
No smooches for 40.
Well, you did appear in a cameo scene in season three.
In a bath with Victoria. Not the smooches I was looking for, but the smooches I got. And I was so, that was one of the most, that day on set was really special, except that it was just one day. So I got like dipped back into this universe and felt so loved and held. And then they were like, and here's your closing paperwork. And I was like, fuck.
Aww.
No, but that was a really good experience. As we got through the second season, the season that I was on, one day I went to one of the writers and I was like, he's gotta be queer, right? Come on. Not even just because I'm playing him, which, again, I was not concerned about being like, oh, let me like deepen my voice and not move around very much. I don't give a fuck about any of that. But just like the beats of his story, I was like, there's no way this person's not a little gay.
It was LA, so.
It was LA. He had a complicated relationship with his dad. He loved his mom and his sister and all the other powerful women in his life.
Yeah.
He was constantly flirting with Joe. I was like, that boy is gay. And I really do believe that. No, my other thing about that is I was like, this is not a show about 40 sexuality. This is a show about Penn Badgley being in love with women. Like, what does it matter? Why do we need to, like, you know?
Yeah, that's totally fair. Was it a good experience for you, though?
Yes, it was hugely, especially after Heather's. It was, because again, that was the vibe on set, is they were like, yeah, you're gay and it's not really driving the plot. So sort of do whatever you want to do. Like, I think when I asked Adria, I was like, he's queer, right? She was like, I think you're at liberty to make your own decisions about that. And we don't really mind either way. It was a very supportive work environment. You know, as we were beginning to shoot the second season, first season was really blossoming into its like full level of success. So it was really cool to be like, wow, we're working on something really special. Penn Badgley is another person who, if he's one of your heroes and you get the opportunity to meet him, you absolutely should. He's kind, he's generous. He's thoughtful. He's open to the people around him. He's a lot of integrity and a very strong moral compass. Sarah Gamble, who is the showrunner, is so fucking cool. Yeah, it was a great experience. It really opened me up to like what my career has been since then. And I had a lot of fun. Like that second season went some cuckoo banana Cocoa Puffs places. And it was like just fun to be on that ride with them. Yeah.
I think it was my favorite of the seasons that I've seen so far. I'm still making my way through, but...
Yeah,
no reason in particular.
You say that to all your one season guest stars.
exactly. Okay, wait, so then, and then Fire Island happened after that?
Fire Island, and then COVID was sort of, well, you, and then COVID was sort of like, what are we doing for a while? And then Fire Island sort of happened, I guess in 2021, maybe? And that was another, you know, I was just really lucky. I had met Bowen through Julio, and we were dear friends. And then when that project came up, it's just another good lesson in like nothing happens the way that you think it's going to. Because I auditioned for that project like a month into COVID when it was going to be at Quibi.
Oh.
And it was like going to be totally different. And then truly like almost a year later, it was like, maybe you're still going to do this. And then I did. Love Joel. I mean, love all of those boys. It's so cool to get to be in something else with Conrad.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah.
Having his name on my resume twice is like such a gag to me.
What was your relationship to the island, Fire Island, not the film Fire Island, before?
I had not been until that summer when we shot the movie. So I think like my second time going out to the island, I'm on my way there with Julio, and I get the call from my team that I had booked the movie. Sobbed. The poor driver was like, what is going on? Julio was like, I don't know what to do. But then it was so cool because I was going to the island to hang out with Bowen and Matt and all of those girls. And so it was like, I just got there. And then it was kind of crazy because then that was my first summer. And then the next summer we were doing the prep. Then later that summer, September of that summer, we shot the movie. And I was sort of like, whoa, I have gotten in really deep with this sandbar very quickly. And then the next summer was sort of our press tour, like a lot of which happened on the island around the premiere, which was so fun. But it was really interesting to suddenly be like, and now you are a spokesperson of this, like, the better part of a decade old queer landmark, and you need to like do a good job articulating. Yeah. You know.
And the pressure on the movie too, because I think so many people are have such a relationship to it. But I'm happy to report, James, I don't know, I'm sure you've seen things here and there, but I feel like it's a modern classic.
Oh yeah, people love it.
We really lucked out. We definitely, I wish I could go back in time to, you know, especially the last 11 days of shooting when we were on Fire Island, all staying in this house together. I think a lot of us began to succumb to the, you know, the pressure of like, oh God, people are going to watch this and they're going to see it. And, you know, yeah, I think the queer audience, because we've been so underfed for such a long time, when things come along that are like, we're trying to speak specifically to you, we're very discerning about who we let mantle themselves as queer media. And we were like, we want to do a good job and we don't want to disappoint people. And I wish I could tell everyone in that house, like, hey, it's going to be fine. They're actually going to think it's really nice. And you don't need to be hating yourself and freaking out and sort of like re-excavating internalized homophobia because you're so stressed about this movie. That said, maybe if we'd all relaxed, the movie wouldn't have been as good. So it's kind of difficult to know. But yeah, we were all very, Joel, Bowen, everyone was very like, oh God, what have we like signed up to do? So thank you for saying that. It's like really, I'm so glad that it like touched people in the way that we hoped it would.
Yeah, we watch it every June now, like a holiday movie. So it's one of those things.
Oh,
you know?
Thank you.
It's amazing. Anyways, wait, I forgot to tell you something about Julio that I think my first introduction to Julio, some podcast, I forget which, they were explaining the plot and the way the show Riverdale is set up in terms of like the camera work and the characters. And I was like, he is the funniest person I have ever like heard speak about anything, because the sensibility with how Julio is describing and watching the TV show Riverdale, comedy gold.
It was actually a big point of contention in our relationship, because truly one of our hardest fought battles as a couple is we just like, for the most part, there's definitely overlap in the Venn diagram, for the most part, do not enjoy the same kind of entertainment. And it's very fictitious sometimes, like he's not really a musical theater girly. And I'm like, that's fine. You can make all the jokes you want, but careful now, because I have a 4-year degree. And I think it's one of the most beautiful and adoring art forms to ever be conceived. So careful now. And we would bicker a lot in those early days about like, what were we going to watch? Because it's like, no, I don't want to watch a 7.5-hour long Criterion Collection film right now. I'd love to just watch something light, just like 1 or 2 episodes. Yeah. Good. And so then when I come to find out, it was like a year in, and I found out that he had a group chat with 2 of his friends because they had all been watching Riverdale since the very beginning. And I was like, how fucking dare you? Saboteur! Like, you haven't watched the second season of You, but you watched all of Riverdale in order?
And that's the Berlanti verse as well, if I recall. So
Yeah, exactly. Which is why it was especially, I was like, so Riverdale, but not You, season 2. Heard. Great. No, I love it. And I love that he is somebody who sees the beauty in a lot of things in ways that you might not expect. And so it's really just a testament to his like gift and position as an art that he watched Riverdale and was like, I'm seeing so much that maybe the average audience member is not thinking about.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
Love you,
what
Julio.
A mind. I know. Oh, I love it.
He got a book on him, huh? Yeah.
All right. Well, James, we are so thankful for all the time that you've given us.
And so much time.
I seriously loved it. We do like to end on a dose of drama. The drama that you have been binge watching, the, you know, it could be something you've been reading. It could be the drama you're thinking about. It truly could be anything at all. I am feeling dramatic about something. Tonight in New York City, Sabrina Carpenter is doing her second night of her concert tour, the Short and Sweet tour. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with her, by the way. I cannot stop listening to her album. Oh my God. I think it's my favorite pop album of the year. I'll just go right and
go off.
I know. I just feel like it's no skips. I mean, obviously it's really short, but every single song hits and she's so fun. And I love her. I did try to get tickets to her concert, 3 different pre-sales, and Ticketmaster is a nightmare. I don't know.
People are, yeah.
Oh my God. It was impossible. And the cheapest ticket to tonight's concert is $484 for like literally the back row. And
is it MSG or is it Radio City?
So it was MSG last night. Tonight, she's at Barclays.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, I do love a Barclays concert.
Me too.
Because I live in Brooklyn, so it's just very accessible. Yeah.
I know. But I'm feeling dramatic about how hard it is to get damn tickets to things.
Sure.
And I need her to just announce like a kind of like Taylor's doing with Eras, and just announce another leg and do like a 6-night residency or something at MSG so we can see Sabrina live.
So you can get in there.
I need to
see her. A lot of my friends have been struggling with this. You're not alone. So just know that. Take comfort in that.
I feel seen. I feel heard. I'm sure I'll see her someday.
You will. Yeah, I think you will.
Anyway, yeah. Sure. Maybe you'll even look. Maybe you'll have her on the pod. You don't know.
When she comes back to Broadway, because you know she did a few days in Mean Girls. She did like 2 or 3 performances in Mean Girls on Broadway. Did you know that, James?
Right before the pandemic?
As Katie.
Katie.
Renee Rapp was Regina.
I see that more.
Yeah, Renee Rapp was Regina at the time.
Speaking of that sort of like echelon of like young, powerful, angst-driven women, I just eat her up.
Oh, she's great.
She would eat me up in real life. She would eat me up in real life.
Respectfully, of course.
I hope. Yeah. Respectfully. Yeah, with all the love in her heart.
A girl can dream.
Honestly, that's kind of that she meets me and she's like, I have to beat you up. I'm sorry. I'm like, go for it.
That's so funny.
But I hear you about Sabrina Carpenter. Dylan, are you feeling dramatic about something that you want? And maybe that'll set my tone. Yeah.
You made me think of something because you described your relationship with Julio and how you have different tastes and like maybe your media diet. My fiance and I last night, you know, he's more of like, he likes anime. He likes more action.
Ooh.
Things like that. So, oh yes. And so, and I'm of course, the thing we come together on is like Bravo and stuff, but I love, you know, maybe something more dramatic or more story driven. And so I showed him After Sun, which, you know, it's Paul Mescal. I don't know if you saw that film a couple years ago.
I haven't. I hear it's devastating though.
It is. And I gave it my second viewing. So I of course saw it when it came out. And then I wanted to show it to him. God bless him. Like he was like, I think bored to tears at times, but by the end we were crying together and it was like a beautiful thing.
See, there you go.
And so like that, finding that compromise and that middle ground in relationships, you know, it shows that we're both in successful ones, right, James? You gotta sometimes come together on things, but I do want to recommend it. I do want to recommend After Sun. Okay. I do think it's really beautiful. And if you're ever just like in need of something, it's like 90-ish minutes. It's powerful. Just like give it a chance because you might be crying at the end like Hunter and I were. So that's my drama.
Probably. I'm a huge, huge crier. Like Julio and I watch any episode of The Simpsons and I'm crying. We still haven't watched the final episode of Daria because I'm like, I don't know that I'm going to survive that experience. So just like everything makes me sob. And I actually love it's good to cry.
Oh, I feel so great afterwards.
You gotta cry. Julio and I had that experience with Cats the Jellicle Ball. I went and then I was like, please come with me. And we did. And he gave it kind of, we left. I wept. He didn't cry, but I think was audibly like moaned in a wistful way the first time that Grisabella came out into the space. He got it. And when we left the theater, he was like, I can't wait to get home and start writing. That made me want to get home and start writing. And I was like, I think that's the nicest compliment he can give a piece of art, really. So that was a super, that was our After Sun, I guess, is it, you know, it really got us together.
Yeah, it was. I hope that Cats the Jellicle Ball has life.
I don't know. I don't know. I really earnestly hope it does.
I've heard rumors.
I don't know. Well, and that actually kind of segues into what we, in our little pre-chat, I'm going to be vague, Iana. And we don't have to limit it to the one perpetrator we mentioned, but just like more broadly speaking, it's like, in this industry, when like casting announcements and transfer announcements and all of that, as I've been so lucky to now have firsthand privy insight to, those things are so delicate. And more importantly, one of the great joys as an actor, as a performer in this career path, is getting to break the news of your success to the people in your life and the community at large. And I just feel like sometimes the understandable and occasionally delicious rumor mill of Broadway gets a little out of pocket. And it's like, let Joy Woods tell us that she's going to be Louise in Gypsy. Maybe don't undercut that beautiful moment she's been working for all her life. Just like from a place of human to human compassion. And also respect the fact that if you say the wrong thing at the wrong time and you fuck up the wrong media or PR timeline, you could actually be doing tangible, measurable damage to the success of that show. So if you really love theater and Hollywood and the arts and entertainment, and someone asks you a question about something that you don't really have a 100% answer to, just don't say anything. Say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not working on that production. How would I know what their transfer timeline is? As much as I want to look you in the eye and be like, yes, God's is transferring, unfortunately, I don't. I want to manifest that, but it's like, I don't know for sure. I'm really not trying to like proselytize or lecture anyone, but it's a lot of people are frustrated about this. A lot of people that I talk to are like, I can't stand this, like, selling out. And it's like, who is sending these people this information? Don't be a patsy. Stop doing that.
No. Well, it's got to be people on the inside, which makes me feel like there's a leak of trust.
Yeah, which and who knows why that's happening. But that's so disappointing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, I think a lot of the people most actively participating in that brand of media aren't performing. That's why they have the time to be doing all of this noise. And so it's like, if you're standing on the sidelines, maybe recognize that you don't appreciate what's at stake for the people you're talking about and stop just making stuff up, girly pop.
It is so crazy. I completely agree with you. It reminds me of when Connor and I were coming out and we told some friends and they told a bunch of other people before we had the chance to tell them. And I was like, that's my story. That's, well, in this case, it was our story, but like, come on.
And it's such a huge moment for the two of you that only, especially something like coming out, sort of in a parallel way to announcing that you've booked a role you've wanted your whole life.
We're Joy and Jordan. We're Joy and Jordan and Gypsy.
That's something that only you guys could have even possibly earned the right to do. So it's like, why is anybody centering themselves in that moment? Also, that's something I didn't ask about, is like your story of coming out as gay twins, or really what that experience was like at all. I'm so sorry. I would love to hear if there's like a boilerplate.
Next time.
We'll have to hang.
After the show we can go around. Do you know what day of the week you're seeing it?
It's Thursday at 5, but we have Sunset Boulevard afterwards.
This is what I actually feel dramatic about. Jimin Moon, who is covering the male lead in Sunset, he was just in Limpika. He's in the ensemble and he's covering Max, I believe is the name of the character. I don't know anything about it and I'm trying to still not know anything about it. Just texted me earlier and was like, you and Julio have tickets for tomorrow's evening performance of Sunset Boulevard. So I'm seeing it tomorrow.
Oh my God, on your night off?
That's what I'm feeling dramatic about. Yeah, I think it sounds like it's going to be fucking crazy.
That's incredible.
This is so funny because Jimin's mom just came and did that. She saw Omeri at 5 and then she saw Sunset Boulevard that evening. That's going to be a full day of theater. Good for you boys.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. I can't wait.
Yeah.
James, it has been so, so fun to hang out with you today. I'm excited to say hi after the show, of course, but thank you for literally all of the amazing performances that we've been able to witness, mostly on television at this point, but now on Broadway as well.
We're working on it. Well, yeah, we'll even out the thank you. Thank you for saying that and for all of the kind things you said. Remind me when you're coming to the show so I can put you on the list and we can Kiki backstage after. And thank you for this beautiful opportunity to talk about this thing we all love so much.
Oh yeah, I think we made Gavin happy.
I hope we did, because he, you know, speaking of performances people have given people, wow. Speaking of Gavin, I would have loved us to run through the like top 10 list of YouTube bootlegs that you like bleed from the ears because you listen to so much.
You're coming back with us. Okay.
Great. We'll do a just musical theater deep cuts episode.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait.
But if you haven't seen his The Lady Must Be Mad on YouTube, just YouTube Gavin Creel, The Lady Must Be Mad. It's absurd. And also, speaking of Sunset Boulevard, Nicole Scherzinger's performance of Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. Okay.
Well, that's a classic. We have that on like a, we have like a YouTube playlist of songs we play before we like go out. Like, you know, the gays pre-gaming to you.
Right.
That's on it for sure.
It's her doing Don't Cry for Me and Phantom. We have both.
And then directly into her music video for that pop single she did, Wet, where she's dancing in the dried out pool. If you've never seen it, there's a full dance break that's just her basically doing acrobatics for the camera, glistening and golden. Watching Don't Cry for Me to Argentina directly into that, it's like the range that exists in this one person's body. Anyway, okay, let me not take up the next 6 hours.
No, I love it. You're totally fine.
I should go like brush my teeth or something.
Thank you so much for joining us.
What a delight.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for today.
Everybody should follow you on Instagram, James N. Scully. What does the N stand for?
Nicholas.
Oh, how lovely.
Oh.
Imagine I'm like Natalie. I wish.
I love it. And while everybody's following James, they got to follow us at The Drama Podcast. I'm at Connor McDowell and Dylan's at Dylan McDowell.
Yes. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.